Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by meditation instructor Marcus Casey, is entitled The Mahamudra Lineage Prayer, A Guide to Practice, Talk 4. How can the nature of thought be nothing whatsoever and yet arise as everything? What is the difference between regular Vipassana meditation and Vipassana meditation in Mahamudra? How does this relate to the Heart Sutra? We discuss the next section of the Mahamudra lineage prayer and answer these questions and many more. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
All right, welcome all. Make sure when you sit down you have a red book, and if you don't have one, grab one from somewhere else. I'm sure there are enough for everyone. All right, well, thank you all for being here today. My name is Marcus Casey, and I am one of the volunteer meditation instructors here. And today we are continuing our talk on this book, The Mahamudra Lineage Prayer, A Guide to Practice, by one of the teachers in our lineage, who was one of the tutors of the 17th Karmapa, Changgu Rinpoche. So we are on chapter 4, so we have had three previous weeks on this great book, and I am enjoying it a lot. I'm learning a whole lot from it. So today, I think instead, because we are studying a prayer, instead of chanting the four-line refuge prayer that we often start with, let's just go ahead and chant the Mahamudra lineage prayer in English today. So you can open it up. It's the first prayer in the book, page 3 in the red book. And we will say it all together in English. Like I said, if you don't have a red book, grab one. There are plenty in around here. Thank you, Julie. All right, let's begin. Great Vajradhara, Talopa, Naropa, and Marpa Milarepa, Lord of Dharma Gampopa, knower of the three times, omniscient Karmapa, lineage holders of the four great and eight lesser schools, Drikung, Taklung, Tsalpa, glorious Drukpa, and others, you who have mastered the profound path of Mahamudra, the Dakpo Kagyu, unrivaled protectors of sentient beings, I pray to you, Kagyu Lamas. Grant your blessing that I may follow your tradition and example. As is taught, detachment is the foot of meditation. Attachment to food and wealth disappears. To the meditator who give up the ties to this life, grant your blessing that attachment to ownership and honor cease. As is taught, devotion is the head of meditation. The Lama opens the door to the profound oral teachings. To the meditator who always turns to him, grant your blessing that uncontrived devotion be born within. As is taught, unwavering attention is the body of meditation. Whatever arises is the fresh nature of thought. To the meditator who rests there in naturalness, grant your blessing that meditation be free from intellectualization. As is taught, the essence of thoughts is Dharmakaya. They are nothing whatsoever, and yet they arise. To the meditator who reflects upon the unobstructed play of the mind, grant your blessing that the inseparability of samsara and nirvana be realized. Through all my births, may I not be separated from the perfect Lama and so enjoy the glory of the Dharma. May I completely accomplish the qualities of the paths and stages and quickly attain the state of Vajradhara. So, as a review, I think I'll go over the outline of the prayer as we have discussed it so far, and I'll actually read through it so that you can understand the sections. So we started with the first section, which is the supplication of the lineage. And that's the part that says, Great Vajradhara, Talopa, Naropa, and Marpa, Milarepa, Lord of Dharma, Gampopa, knower of the three times, omniscient Karmapa, lineage holders of the four great and eight lesser schools, Drikung, Taklung, Tsalpa, Glorious Drukpa, and others, you who have mastered the profound path of Mahamudra, the Dakpo Kagyu, unrivaled protectors of sentient beings, I pray to you, Kagyu Lamas, grant your blessing that I may follow your tradition and example. So that's the introduction. It connects us to our lineage and supplicates the lineage masters for their blessings on this practice. The next lines are about practicing the Dharma, and they specifically split up the preliminaries, and there are four lines on the common preliminary practices and four on the special preliminary practices. So the four on the karma, on the common preliminaries are, as is taught, detachment is the foot of meditation. Attachment to food and wealth disappears. To the meditator who gives up the ties to this life, grant your blessing that attachment to ownership and honor cease. And then for the four special preliminary practices, the next section. As is taught, devotion is the head of meditation. The Lama opens the door to the profound oral teachings. To the meditator who always turns to him, grant your blessing that uncontrived devotion be born within. And the next section is the section on shamatha meditation. Now, and then the section we're going to be covering today is on vipassana. So you may already be familiar with shamatha and vipassana in a non-Mahamudra context. And this is specifically talking about shamatha and vipassana in a Mahamudra context. So the shamatha section is, as is taught, unwavering attention is the body of meditation. Whatever arises is the fresh nature of thought. To the meditator who rests there in naturalness, grant your blessing that meditation be free from intellectualization. And today, then, we're going to be talking about Mahamudra Vipassana. And the lines are, as is taught, the essence of thoughts is Dharmakaya. They are nothing whatsoever, and yet they arise. To the meditator who reflects upon the unobstructed play of the mind, grant your blessing that the inseparability of samsara and nirvana be realized. So, a word about vipassana and shamatha for those who may not be familiar with the words. Shamatha is a Sanskrit word, and the Tibetan word for it is shine, and it is our calm abiding meditation, our resting meditation. We often, that's what we do in the hour before we go to tea and then have this Dharma talk. We have 1 hour of shamatha meditation in this room. Now, that is the non-Mahamudra shamatha, usually, that most people are practicing, in which there is an object of the awareness. Usually, you rest your awareness on the breath, or you can rest your awareness on a candle or a statue or something like that. The difference between that shamatha and Mahamudra shamatha is that in Mahamudra shamatha, you are resting your awareness on the naturalness of the mind rather than on an object like the breath. Now, we also have in our lineage, in our path, in our teachings, we have vipassana, which is insight meditation. And there are many different types of insight meditation that you can do. We will get to kind of how those differ from the kind done in Mahamudra. But I want to start back a little bit. And it's kind of a circuitous route, but I think it makes a lot of sense to explain how and why Mahamudra differs from regular Vipassana meditation. So You may already be familiar with the concept of the five aggregates, or the five heaps. The Sanskrit word is skandhas, the five skanda or skandhas. A skanda is a heap, aggregate, collection, grouping, and there are five of these, and they are the five groups of things that cause us to cling. The five material and mental factors that are the basis of our craving and our clinging. They are form or matter, feeling or sensation, discernment or perception, mental formations, and consciousness. So we won't spend a lot of time talking about each one here, but it's helpful to understand because it is kind of key to understanding the difference between the types of Vipassana meditation. Rinpoche refers to the Heart Sutra, and specifically the well-known verse that says, "Form is emptiness, emptiness form. Form is not other than emptiness, emptiness is not other than form." And remember, form is the first of the five aggregates. So the Heart Sutra then goes on to include the other four. And it says, just like that, feeling, discernment, mental formations, and consciousness are empty. So it is basically telling us that all of the five aggregates are empty. And the purpose of insight meditation is to realize emptiness. Now, the type of Vipassana that is commonly taught, and it's taught in our lineage, it's taught in monasteries, and there is a long and very rich tradition of study of this type of meditation. It is a logical reasoning and debate called Madhyamaka that really starts with form or matter and starts to deconstruct it and starts to show how it does not have the kind of inherent existence that we tend to think that it has, that it is actually emptiness. I mean, there are many volumes. There are huge volumes written by some of our Karmapas exploring this very thing. And for people who have access to the right training, this can be a path to realization, understanding through logical exploration the emptiness of the five aggregates. But Mahamudra takes a different approach. In Mahamudra, instead of starting with form and taking on external objects, such as this table, and trying to understand the emptiness of this table, we focus instead on the aggregate of consciousness. And more specifically, because consciousness can be broken down, and we'll get to that later, we focus on the sixth consciousness, which is our mental consciousness. And the reason we do that is there's a special advantage there. Because when you are using your logical reasoning and you're working out the emptiness or working out the true nature of an external object, your mind is separate from that object. You're using your mental consciousness to work that out. But if you use your mental consciousness to work out the emptiness of your mental consciousness, then you can do it in a much more experiential way without having to engage the concepts and the logic. And so that's why we talk about Mahamudra as being the mind resting in itself. The mind is examining itself. It is a shortcut that we can use to wake up to the actual nature of all things. So, the reason this meditation does not look at the aggregate of form is because it's very difficult. We possess the habits since beginningless time of perceiving form as solid and real. So we meditate on the other four aggregates, primarily on consciousness and primarily on the sixth consciousness, because it's the easiest one for us to recognize as empty. So the verse on Vipassana in our Mahamudra lineage prayer is the second aspect of the main practice of Mahamudra. The first one is Mahamudra Shamatha, and now we're moving on to Mahamudra Vipassana. And it says, and this is a little bit different translation, the nature of thought is Dharmakaya, as is taught. It is nothing whatsoever, yet it arises as everything. To the meditator for whom all arises in unceasing play, grant your blessings so that I realize samsara and nirvana undivided. Emptiness is the nature of all things. Vipassana meditation is the cultivation of the recognition of this emptiness. Because it is the nature of all phenomena, it is vast and profound, and therefore very difficult to experience directly. But we try to overcome this difficulty by not looking outward at external phenomena, but by turning inward and examining our own mind to discover its emptiness. Rinpoche says that usually when we think about our mind, we conceive of it as being substantial and solid. Maybe it's something we have trouble controlling, something that gives us a lot of trouble, perhaps. But he says that if we look directly, not conceptually, at our own mind, we discover that it has no substantiality or solidity whatsoever. This is how we meditate on the mind's nature. Rinpoche says that it is quite possible when doing this practice to come to an understanding of what the mind is like. But being able to understand that the mind is like this or like that is of no value, he says. We are concerned entirely with what we experience when we look directly at our own mind. And when we look directly at our own mind without prejudice or presupposition, we find nothing. Nothing is at rest, and it is not at rest anywhere. So think about that one for a minute. I've turned that one around in my mind for several days. Nothing is at rest, and it's not at rest anywhere. When we finally have an authentic state of stillness in our mind that we achieve through dedicated shamatha practice, then we can begin working with the movement of mind. Movement occurs when thoughts arise. At a certain point of our meditation, a thought will arise. And when a thought arises, we look directly at it to see what exactly is there and where it is. And if we look without presupposition or conceptualization, we discover that there is nothing there. We won't find anything anywhere. Thoughts just appear. We are aware of their arising, and yet if we look straight at it, there's nothing there. This is what is meant in the Mahamudra lineage prayer by the nature of thought is Dharmakaya. While thoughts appear, they are without any substantiality or substantial existence whatsoever. Now, what do we mean by Dharmakaya? We've talked in previous talks about the different bodies that a Buddha can appear in. The Dharmakaya is the body of emptiness, the body of the true nature of all things. And it is a body beyond all form, and it is the ultimate body, speech, and mind of a Buddha. So this is making quite a claim. It's saying the nature of thought, our thoughts, is the same nature as the nature of the body, speech, and mind of a Buddha. And that's every thought. Rinpoche says, the next line says, it is nothing whatsoever, yet it arises as everything. And Rinpoche says it might be a little easier to understand that, to turn it around and say, although thoughts arise, they are nothing. So when we follow thoughts and they generate further thoughts and on, they can lead to disturbing emotions. But if we look at any present thought, there is nothing there in the sense that it does not have any kind of substantial entity. In a sense, we can say that nothing has arisen, and that is the emptiness of thought. So when we say the nature of the mind is emptiness, this does not mean that thoughts are nothing at all. Lama Kathy likes to say that thoughts are no thing, but they are not nothing. Thoughts are the unity of luminous clarity and emptiness. We'll get into that a little bit more later, too. They certainly appear, but what appears isn't anything. There's no limitation to the content of thought. It possesses the unlimited variety, and that's one way we know they have no substance. Is there anything else? Is there any entity or thing that you can think of that is unlimited, that has an unlimited quality? No, because once something is a thing, then it has particular characteristics, and you can describe it in a certain way. Lama Kathy often substitutes the word limitlessness for the word emptiness, for this very reason. And also because, and we'll talk about this some too, when we say the word emptiness, we're not talking about voidness, like the voidness of space, a complete lack. So we'll talk about that a little bit more too. So yeah, that's why Lama Kathy likes to use the word limitlessness. So when the prayer says the nature of thought is Dharmakaya, it's referring to the nature of mind itself, about the co-emergence of emptiness and appearances in the Dharmakaya. When we have not recognized our mistaken perception of phenomena, in other words, when we have not realized the nature of all phenomena as emptiness, then we experience the mistaken appearances of samsara. And that's where we are all stuck right now. But when we have recognized mind as it is and recognized our confusion about the nature of mind, we learn to recognize that these thoughts are in fact the primordial Dharmakaya, that these thoughts are primordially liberated and primordially pure. That's every thought. That's even those thoughts that we tend to chain together that lead to disturbing emotions. That's every thought. So when thoughts are generated, there's no need to attempt to stop them or get rid of them, because that's actually what you're using to recognize the true nature. You're actually using your thoughts in Mahamudra Vipassana. You recognize the nature of each thought and see it for what it is. And when we see them as they are, we realize they are an aspect of the Dharmakaya. So what you begin to see with Mahamudra is that every single thought you have is an opportunity to realize the true nature of mind and phenomena. because we can recognize the nature of that thought as dharmakaya, as emptiness, as the nature of all things. Until we recognize the nature of all things, the nature of thoughts, we see ourselves as solid and real and substantial. And we hold on to this mistaken belief. We believe in an existing self, that there is a thing that exists that is myself, and we become attached to that. And we become very defensive of things that threaten it, things that threaten to bring harm or discomfort. We cherish ourself. And this can cause us to develop aggression or dislike toward anything that we think might harm us. And this thinking is based on an incorrect belief, and that incorrect belief is the root or cause of suffering in samsara. So what we're doing here is we are working on waking up to the incorrect or mistaken belief that we have had since beginningless time that is the reason we are stuck in a state of suffering. When we train in recognizing the co-emergence of thought and emptiness, we realize that thoughts are nothing whatsoever. We experience that they are nothing whatsoever. We look for the origin of the thought and cannot find it. Thoughts are not experienced, as are most things in samsara that have an origin. Rather, they just appear. They have no origin. They are unborn. Likewise, where does a thought end? When a thought has stopped and gone away, where has it gone? We can never find out where they go. So we say that thoughts, which we so habitually tend to think of as being significant and real, are actually unborn, unceasing, and non-dwelling. Their nature is clear light, and they are empty. That's what the prayer means when it says that they are nothing whatsoever. They simply have no foundation. Again, don't think of that nothingness, that emptiness. Don't think of that as being a voidness. A void, or like we think of with space, there's no realization, no qualities, no clarities. But emptiness is not a dead space with no feeling or wisdom or luminous clarity. The emptiness of thoughts is an emptiness that knows, and then it is an emptiness that is the foundation for all good qualities that we seek. It is limitless. It can appear as the body, speech, and mind of a Buddha. It can appear as anything. And so the prayer says, it is nothing whatsoever, yet it arises as everything. So what does it mean for someone who has actually experienced this? Rinpoche asks the question, does this mean that the meditator can't tell the difference between one state of mind or another, between a good and a painful state? He says, not at all. A person who has experience in meditation and has developed a high level of understanding does not become attached to good experiences and is not discouraged by bad experiences. If one becomes attached to good states of mind, then you want an even better state of mind. And when that doesn't happen, you become discouraged. If a painful state comes along, then you feel sad and depressed. An experienced meditator knows that these states of mind all simply have the nature of peace. And that's why the prayer says, to the meditator for whom all arises in unceasing play, or in the case of this translation we used, to the meditator who reflects upon the unobstructed play of the mind. What is it that's unceasing? the perfect nature of all phenomena and thoughts. They are not real things. They are just like reflections. Although they arise, they are in their very nature pacified. When we recognize the nature of all things, then we can understand the inseparability of samsara and nirvana. We recognize that they have the same nature, and that it is only in our ignorance that we experience them differently. And so we appeal to the lineage. Grant your blessings so that I realize samsara and nirvana as inseparable. So think about that again. If every thought, the thoughts that lead to disturbing emotions, and the good and pure thoughts, if every thought has the same nature, then the problem is not in the thoughts themselves. The problem is not in our situations. The problem is not in the external environment or external world. That is not what distinguishes samsara and nirvana. What distinguishes samsara and nirvana is simply whether or not we are holding on to the mistaken beliefs that we have that creates things as solid and real, and that does not recognize the true nature of all things as emptiness. So for someone who has recognized emptiness and does recognize the true nature of all things, there is no difference between samsara and nirvana. So Rinpoche goes on to talk about practice. He says, we all have different kinds of experiences. Sometimes things will seem to be going well, and we say, wow, things are going great. And sometimes we feel disappointed in our practice, and we say, wow, our practice isn't going so great. And sometimes it used to be going great, and now it's not doing so. And Rinpoche says that these are just experiences, and many great siddhas of our lineage have said that these experiences vanish like mist on a hot morning, on a hot summer day. No matter what experience we have, that quality of our meditation is always going to vanish, and so it's never worth becoming attached to or fixated on the experience. So when you have a positive experience, don't become too delighted. And when you have a negative experience, don't be too disappointed, because neither is going to last. However, the fundamental nature of mind that we are looking at never changes at all. We simply look at our mind again and again and again. So to practice this vipassana, we begin with shamatha. And once we have a foundation of shamatha, we look with vipassana directly at our own mind, not with reasoned investigation, as we may have been taught in the other vipassana meditation practices, but we look straight at the mind, and it is called bringing direct perception to the path. We are looking right at the mind to realize mind's true nature. Meditating in this way, we find the true nature of reality, which is called dharmata. Dharmata is just one thing, or emptiness. Dharmata is just one thing, but we describe it from several different vantage points. We can say that it is a union of luminous clarity and emptiness, or a union of appearance and emptiness, or a union of bliss and emptiness. So the first way is looking at it as a union of luminous clarity and emptiness. And Rinpoche says, when we are looking at the mind itself, whether it is at rest or in motion, we don't find any place where it rests or anything that is moving. Even when we look at disturbing emotions or thoughts directly, we don't find anything, and we find that whatever appears to us is self-liberated. This is true of any state of mind, whether it is extremely agitated or very peaceful. We say that it is self-liberated because it automatically dissolves when seen directly, and therefore it must be empty of inherent existence. But this emptiness is not mere voidness. It is very brilliant or luminous, and therefore we say that Mahamudra is a union of luminous clarity and emptiness. The second way of meditating in Mahamudra is called meditating on the union of appearances and emptiness. And for those who have practiced one of the mantra practices, such as Chinrezig, or Green Tara, White Tara, Medicine Buddha, and many others that we practice, there is a stage of these practices called the generation or creation stage, in which we are building the visualization. And that visualization is nothing other than our own mind. But also with our experience of external things or phenomena. We may not recognize this, and Rinpoche says it's not important to practice this, but just like those visualizations are nothing other than our own mind, our experiences of the external world and phenomena are nothing other than our own mind. All that is perceived by our sense consciousnesses and our thoughts are what we mean by appearance. So in our Vajrayana practices, in our mantra practices, when we visualize a pure realm, or when we visualize the deity or the yidam of our practice, all these are a union of appearance and emptiness. When they appear to us, they are empty. And while being empty, they also appear. They are like a rainbow, because we can clearly see a rainbow, yet it is also clearly insubstantial. And this is what is meant by the union of appearance and emptiness. Rinpoche also describes the union of bliss and emptiness, but he describes it in terms of a practice that is a practice that, as far as I know, is only practiced by lamas or in three-year retreat setting. And so it's a little out of reach for me to try to explain, and probably for most of us. But there are practices that are practices of bliss. And he talks about it being the union of bliss and emptiness as experienced in those practices. So, let's see how much time we have. Okay. Really quickly, he goes through the five paths, or the journey to enlightenment, as it's described often, through five paths. The path of accumulation, in which we are working on accumulating merit. We're working on doing virtuous deeds. Then the path of application, or juncture, in which we apply ourselves to the practice and cause it to be imbued in our mind. In this path, we create a lot of mental fabrications. And then the third path, which is the path of vision or seeing, in which we have the direct experience of and insight into the nature of phenomena. And that nature is emptiness. The sutras say that to reach this path requires incalculable eons. However, in the practice of Vajrayana, with the right students, the right teachers, the special pointing out instructions, and great diligence, we can achieve direct insight into the nature of mind in one lifetime. The path of seeing is equivalent to reaching the first bhumi, or the first level on the path of the bodhisattvas. Then the fourth one is the path of meditation, which is the path, I think it's sometimes called the path of one taste, or something like that, or of no taste. In other words, this means we aren't a different practitioner when things are going well and then from when things fall apart and difficulties arise. This type of meditation does not allow our practice to be overcome by happiness or suffering. When we can do this, when everything can be brought to the path without a judgment of good or bad, then our meditation continues regardless of circumstances. And that leads to the path of no more training, which is the fifth path. And at that point, no more meditation is needed. So Rinpoche mentioned earlier, and we talked earlier about how we use the fifth aggregate of consciousness as the starting point for Mahamudra Vipassana, but that consciousness is split into multiple aspects, and very specifically, we use the sixth consciousness. So now we'll back up a little bit and talk about the consciousnesses. The first five consciousnesses come from your five senses as we understand them. They are the eye consciousness, the ear consciousness, the nose consciousness, the tongue consciousness, and the body or touch consciousness. The way these consciousnesses work together, we can take eye consciousness as an example. The eye consciousness sees something as perception. It uses the eye itself, the organ, and then there's an eye consciousness. And so the eye consciousness sees or perceives an image or a shape. And then the mental consciousness takes that input and kicks in, and that's the sixth consciousness. So when you see something, you have an eye consciousness seeing it, and then you begin to form thoughts with your mental consciousness. You form concepts. And this is true of the other four organs too. Ear consciousness hears something, and then your mental consciousness starts forming concepts out of what was perceived. That's happening right now. Same with your nose, tongue, your body, and your sense of touch. And Rinpoche says that when sensory information is perceived by the sensory consciousnesses, the awareness of an object will cause information in the conceptual mental consciousness to arise. That's a whole lot of words to say that when we perceive something with our senses, thoughts begin immediately. And that's our mental consciousness, that consciousness that gives rise to thoughts. So the first five consciousnesses he calls gateway sensory consciousnesses that create the immediately preceding condition for a mental consciousness to arise or for a thought to arise. The mental consciousness itself does not perceive raw sensory information. The objects that appear to the sense consciousness are not material, meaning they are generalized concepts of the perception, something that is made up by the mind. Because the sense consciousness can think about the past or the future or the qualities of an object, whether it is good or bad. It can layer on concepts. So basically, Rinpoche gives the example of a drinking glass, right? The eye consciousness sees the glass, or this cup, sees its shape and color, but it doesn't think the word cup. It just perceives the color and the shape. After that, the mental consciousness takes over, labels it a cup. It takes that generalized concept of a cup and applies it to the shape and color that has been perceived by the eye consciousness. It might think about other cups that it has seen. It might label this cup as being clean or dirty or expensive or cheap or good or bad. All sorts of concepts that become applied to what came in through the eye consciousness. And what's interesting is that a mental consciousness itself, or a thought or concept itself, can also become the immediately preceding condition for another mental consciousness to arise. In other words, a thought leads to a thought. So a perception through your senses can lead to a thought, and a thought itself can lead to a thought. The mind, the consciousness that we are engaging when we practice Mahamudra Vipassana is this mental consciousness that applies those concepts. So remember when we read from the Heart Sutra about the five aggregates? It also covers the consciousnesses as well and says, thus, Shariputra, emptiness has no form, no feeling, no discernment, no mental formations, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no shape, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, nor anything. So in summary, the four lines of this prayer that we have discussed today point to a way to practice Mahamudra Vipassana meditation in which we allow our mental consciousness to directly experience itself as emptiness, as the limitless, luminous clarity of the body, speech, and mind of the Buddha. In doing so, every thought that arises becomes an occasion to realize emptiness. Now, a word on this. Some of the preceding verses talk about the preliminaries. This is not something you should necessarily go home and expect to be practicing based on this. No matter how many times you listen to the podcast recording. This is something that you should only do in working with a teacher. And there are many preliminaries that prepare us for realizing emptiness. And now I will open it up to questions. I will say that especially in this talk, as with all of my talks, but especially this one, I have very much relied on the words of Rinpoche, because this is a very difficult, advanced thing to talk about and very difficult to use words to try to explain. So I'll open it up for questions and I will do my very best, but I will also be honest if it's beyond my ability to answer. So feel free to make any kind of comment or ask any kind of question.
Can you mention or describe or real briefly talk about the other types of Vipassana meditation?
Sure. So specifically, the kind of Vipassana that is taught in that we talked about today that is not Mahamudra Vipassana is it's somewhat similar, but it starts with external objects. So you would start with the table. And you would say, where does this table exist? If I take off a leg of this table, is it still a table? Is the leg a table if I took it apart? And if that leg is not a table, what if I take all of the parts off of it? Are they a table? Then where was the tableness about this table in the first place? Those are the types of, and there's a lot of them, those are the types of arguments that Majjhimaka goes through. And you start to really examine the concepts that you layer on to everything that you perceive. And you start to look at that perception and try to recognize that there is no inherent existence. You also talk about the fact that in order for something to exist from its own side, for it to have a self or a sense of tableness, then it shouldn't be dependent on something else. Because if it's dependent on something else, then it doesn't have actually a true nature of being a table. But this table was dependent on a tree, which was dependent on weather. It was dependent on a carpenter. It was dependent on so many factors to come together. It also shouldn't be divisible. in order to have an essence. But we know that this table is made up of billions of atoms and molecules and all kinds of things. And therefore can be separated into almost an infinite number of pieces. So there's a lot of exploration, and there's a lot of that type of deconstruction of our concepts to try to realize emptiness. And it is a very interesting and very worthwhile thing to ponder and to work on. But our teachers do tell us that taking that path can also be very difficult. I think it appeals to certain people. It works very well for certain people, and can help. The difference between that and Mahamudra Vipassana, though, is that it's far harder to come about a direct experience. You can get an understanding of it. You can really follow all those logical lines, but to get the direct experience of emptiness is really tough. Whereas with your mind looking at itself, you can more easily have that direct experience. I think that's the difference. I think there are other types of Vipassana meditation, but the type I had mentioned was the Madhyamaka teachings, and so that's what I thought I would bring up, and that's what Rinpoche compares it to. So, any other questions? Yes, Ron.
Yeah, when you were talking about the five senses, it reminded me of the six sense bases from a Pali text that I read. And do you want to hear them?
Sure.
Right, they say there's an eye, and there's form, and there's a fetter dependent on the two conditions. And a fetter is like an invisible tether. So you can think there's like you see something and it interrupts your meditation, and you think, well, that's natural because there's like an invisible tether that attracts my eye to the form. And then there's ear and sounds, and there's a fetter dependent on those two conditions. And there's a tongue and a taste, fetter dependent on those two conditions. You just go down the line. Body and tangibles, and there's fetter dependent on those two conditions. Then there's a mind and mind objects, and there's a fetter dependent on those two conditions.
And those mind objects are thoughts?
Right, yeah. So I always like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I do like that. And the Heart Sutra includes those as well, because it says no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. But then it also includes no shape, which is what the eye is perceiving. No sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, nor anything. So
those are like, like building of complexity, complex concepts, because of the six.
Right. All right. Well, if there's no one else, you should have the single sheet, and I don't have one, and I'll grab one. Single sheet, dedication of merit. I thank you all for being here today and sticking with this teaching that had a lot of technicalities in some ways, but I found very helpful and very interesting the chapter when I read it, and I hope I was able to pass that along to you all. So let's dedicate the merit of being here and listening to Rinpoche's words today. Let's read it in English, please. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samanta Bhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas, that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate all this virtue. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.